Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest on today's show is Dr. Holly Dutton, Medical Director at the Tampa and Clearwater locations of Veggie Yard for Pets, a national enterprise that specializes in providing around-the-clock emergency and critical care services for pets. We were introduced to Dr. Dutton and VeggieR in a June edition of Talking Animals. We heard then about some of the traits that distinguish VeggieR from most emergency vet hospitals, ranging from the open floor plan to the policy that enables someone calling a VeggieR location to immediately speak with a veterinarian. So we may review some of those traits in today's program, but with the holidays approaching, I mainly invited Dr. Dutton to return today, primarily to discuss the kind of holiday-related emergency vet visits that are fairly common, maybe some uncommon ones too, and more importantly, perhaps what we can do to prevent those. So specifically, some categories of common pet emergencies I might explore with Dr. Dutton would include food toxicity and GI upset, foreign body ingestion, toxic plants, and electrical and tree-related injuries. Additional holiday pet emergencies considered less common but no less important, especially if you live with the animal experiencing that emergency, that we could cover with Dr. Dutton might include firework or noise-related or noise-induced, I should say, trauma, burns and smoke inhalation, accidents during travel, severe overeating leading to bloat, and lots of important potential topics to cover. Plus, of course, we invite your questions about holiday emergencies, things you want to avoid or things you want to just clarify that you might have some unsure understanding about. All that and more when I speak with Dr. Holly Dutton in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later in the show, I'll speak with Ellen Jaffe Jones, the super successful athlete, running coach, personal trainer, cooking instructor, and author of multiple books, including Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. She'll be delivering a talk this Sunday, November 23rd, entitled The Vegan Edge in Competition and Life, part of an afternoon extravaganza at Lotus Vegan Restaurant located in Pinellas Park in St. Petersburg. And your ticket includes a beautiful vegan spread. But more about that when Ellen joins us later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss, among other topics, the family dog getting into the eggnog, and there are any number of holiday pet emergencies with Dr. Holly Dutton, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmaps.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dr. Holly Dutton back to Talk Animals. Good morning, Dr. Dutton.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back.
Great to see you again. Thanks for coming back, and great to have you, of course, in the studio, which, as I mentioned last time, doesn't happen as often. A lot of my guests just aren't local or even in Florida, so it's just nice to be face-to-face with somebody. So when we did speak in June, we kind of spoke more generally about the Veggie Yard for Pets operation, where I mentioned a moment ago our focus today will be holiday-oriented emergency visits for pets. But for those who might not have heard that conversation and might be unfamiliar with Veggie Yard for Pets, let's review some fundamental information. Just give me a brief overview, if you would, of Veggie Yard for Pets, what it's like, what we should know about it if we didn't hear that previous conversation.
Absolutely. It's easy to talk about something that you love. So at Veggie Yard for Pets here in Tampa Bay and across the country, we do things very differently in an emergency setting. So we have an open floor plan. We invite pet owners to participate in all of the emergency care that we provide. We have doctors 24/7, 7 days a week. And one of the distinguishing things that we do is that you can call and speak to a doctor. So a lot of things that we're going to talk about today, if you have any more questions about your pet through the holidays, you can pick up the phone and give our doctors a call and they can triage over the phone. We sit on the floor wherever is most comfortable for your pet. We will let you stay with your pet through the night. So any emergency that you want to stay for, be there for your pet, we are here for you.
And I wondered, kind of based on last time. There we go. I wondered, based on last time, the policy about somebody can call in and talk to a vet right away, does that ever get, I don't want to say abused, but do people sort of take advantage of, like, hey, if I call this place, I can talk to a vet in 2 seconds and skip over a lot of the red tape and rigmarole that might happen elsewhere?
Yeah, I could imagine that you could see that it could be taken advantage of. And I think there is a fear with veterinarians in the community to take those phone calls. The truth is that most of the time people are just scared, and that immediate conversation can either help triage right away and say, yes, come in, or no, you can sleep tight tonight. You don't need to put your dog in the car in the middle of the night and get your baby out of the house. And you can go to your regular vet in the morning. And there are some things that we can't answer over the phone. So when that happens, if there are questions we can't answer, we will politely tell you what we think is happening. But again, we can't do x-rays and blood work through the phone. Can't talk to your pet.
It's not magic.
Yeah, it's not magic. I wish it were. But most people have great intentions when they call in, and it's just about fear, and we're there to ease your mind. And if we can't ease your mind, then at least we can tell you to come in right away, that it's worth coming in to get peace of mind or just get the ball rolling. And the faster you get emergency care, the better the outcome's going to be.
So from your point of view, and hopefully from the caller's point of view, those calls where they immediately get to connected with a vet are really to determine, like, how bad the situation is and how urgently an animal should be brought in or maybe not brought in based on what they tell that vet that they get on the phone right away. That's kind of the primary purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are certain things that when you call in and ask, our front desk knows right away you need to come in immediately. Some people, though, still want to walk through that process with a veterinarian. And at that point, we have the veterinarian take the phone call. We see those phone calls as part of our caseload. And so it is where we staff our doctor team to be able to handle those caseloads. At times, can it be challenging? Absolutely. Nothing's perfect. But we always strive to make sure that we can get to the phone as soon as possible. And if there is an emergency that walks in, we'll politely say, just come right in. We have to step to an emergency, and we will triage you right away.
And those are, as I recall, that can be pretty much any hour of the day that phone call could be made if something happened and you needed to consult with a vet. It's,
absolutely.
24/7, basically.
24/7, 365, through all the hurricanes that we thankfully did not have this year.
Right. So far, please don't jinx us. We're just in the last stretch here.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned the floor plan, and we talked about that a little bit last time, but I think it's kind of important, and it's one of the things that kind of helps define VEGR. So talk a little bit about the floor plan and how it's set up and why that's important from your guys' standpoint.
Absolutely. So when you walk right through the doors, you see our treatment floor. There is no back that your pet is taken to. You're only placed into a room if you need privacy, if your pet maybe is fearful or there's aggression concerns, or if there's something infectious, then we will separate you. But when you walk in, you walk right into the action, which can be overwhelming for some people. So it's important that we spread the word about who we are and what we do, and then all the pros that come along with that. So you get to see our doctors in action, whether they're doing surgery, whether they are having like hard conversations. You also get to see the nurses who are superheroes that are carrying out all of those treatment plans. You get to sit with other people who are walking through something similarly as you, and suddenly that ear infection isn't as overwhelming to you as this dog that may be dying because they have a bleeding mass inside. And so it really just connects us all together and allows you to see everything for what it is. And also, there's a comfort component to not being separated from your pet. And so most people want to be there for their dog or their cat or any other animal that you choose to bring in. But at the same time, the pet wants to be there with their owner. And so that treatment plan allows for that treatment, the open setting allows for that to happen.
Right. Is there any occasional thing where it works in reverse, like they walk in and they see everything because it is wide open, and maybe, like you said, there's a more serious case that, and can it be upsetting or alarming to the animal and or the human when they walk in and see something like that maybe they weren't quite as prepared for because, you know, the last time they were at an emergency vet, they didn't have that kind of floor plan, for example?
Yeah, there are the occasional people that can be overwhelming for, but our reviews, our internal surveys, our feedback, our thank yous that we get every single day from our customers who bring in thank yous and treats, it's honestly the differentiator for them. We have a lot of people who actually won't transfer to specialty or go back to their regular vet because they want to stay with their pet. And so sometimes we're having to kick people out, you know, not in an aggressive way, but say, no, your pet really needs to go somewhere, and they want to stay with their pet. So for the most part, it's not a deterrent for anyone. If there is something that we can see someone's visibly upset or concerned or in shock, we will politely ask if they need to go to a private space.
And I know, because the thing you brought up, is there a point at which, like, you've treated that emergency and then the dog, the cat, the animal is better, and that like that's kind of the end of their veg ER experience. In other words, so it's kind of made it sound like some people sort of have such an amazing experience that they kind of want to cling on and hang with the veg ER team. Yeah. But is that not really possible based on the nature of the hospital, right?
Right. Yes, you are correct. We are only emergency. So if we don't do your primary care or follow-ups for that matter. So even though people do want to stay with us, which is a common occurrence, we will direct them back to their regular veterinarian or specialty when needed.
You just politely say, get out?
No, like that. Yeah. Not at all. Yeah. We thank them for the praise, and we understand that the challenges they may have faced, and know that their vet can still offer a great experience and specialty can still help them where it's needed. Every place has their pro. This is just our culture and what we do, and we're proud of it.
And also, again, I would think that it'd be pretty easy to make a comparison. Like if you went to a human ER and you got fixed up, you wouldn't necessarily say, hey, can I start seeing them as part of a regular practice? Be like, I don't think so. You're in the ER, you got fixed up, they send you home, and then you go see your other doctor, or you don't see any doctor because you don't have one. But
yeah,
you don't try to keep coming back to the ER to visit.
That's correct. The thing that you would do, though, in the future is if you unfortunately do have another emergency and your experience was great, at least you know where you can come back to.
Yeah, it saves time and just say, well, I know exactly what to do now.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's take a call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Dutton.
Hi, I have a question for the lady from Veg. I think I heard you recently on the show, your other interview, and I wasn't paying that close attention, honestly. But between then and now, I had a need to call Veg, and I didn't know you were one of the only emergency vets in the Tampa area that had a vet accessible when I called, which I very much appreciated. That's how it used to be when I lived in Gainesville at the University of Florida Vet School. You can call and talk to a vet in the emergency area. My question to you is, it was a foster kitten I had, taken charge of off the internet, and she ended up dying of intussusception. But when I was quoted by the vet, I believe, to even bring her in that night and, get all the workup, ultrasounds or whatever, all the testing, imaging that needs to be done, I believe the vet quoted me like $8,000 to $10,000. And I hung up the phone, thanked her for her opinion, and asked all my friends, who can afford $8,000 to $10,000? So my question to you is, I heard you mention earlier you have nationwide locations. Are you owned by private equity? That's what I immediately thought. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Dutton. I mean, feel that whichever way you'd like.
Yeah. First of all, I'm glad that we were able to take your phone call. Thanks at Veg. Thank you for calling in and sharing your experience. The truth is that quotes over the phone are challenging because we don't know what we are going to see when something does or doesn't come in. And so a lot of times it's best to just come in and then we can have that conversation. And it may be that that wasn't even needed. It's hard when people are asking for prices. And so we don't want someone to be, blindsided that emergency care is expensive. It's all medicine's expensive. The machines are the same as in human health care. The education, the cost for education is expensive. And so, and there also is like a service that we want to provide, and it's very kind of you to help a foster animal. And so I appreciate that. So all of that to say, verbal quotes over the phone, we really don't like to do unless someone asks specifically. But even then, we still want to work with you. So if you come in, we can see if that's actually what's needed. So next time you can just come in and we can see what's actually going on and then give you a detailed treatment plan. Because again, like a benefit of the phone calls is that we can triage you and say, yep, that's something that needs to be seen. The negative is we can't see through the phone, do the tests through the phone, know everyone's situation, know the pet situation. And so it's best to just come right in. To answer your question.
Go ahead. You were getting to the thing I was about to ask anyway, so go ahead, sir.
Yeah, to answer your question, Veg was founded by one Dr. David Bessler, who is a veterinarian. He started with one practice in White Plains, New York, and then he partnered with David Gladstein, who has a financial background and actually did a lot of business work in the veterinary field, and in emergency pet care was a underserved community that is a need in the area. And so as they've grown and scaled, they have us as employees are actually shareholders in the company. And so we, you know, the better we do for the pets, the more that we take care of people, then that value is there so that we can have that ownership to do what pets need. And so is it, did they take private equity at some point, or is there shareholders? I don't know the full answer to that question. And I'm not sure if you have any more on that, how that would help you with your question, let me know.
Yeah, you're welcome to call back if you want to try to elaborate with Dr. Dutton. She could maybe therefore elaborate in response more. But is it possible that somebody, I mean, because one of the things I was, again, thinking about, there's so many virtues to this idea that you can immediately get a vet on the phone. But I'm also thinking sometimes people are so upset by what they're seeing, and they may not be accurately, of course they're doing their best, but they may not be accurately describing what the symptoms are or what's going on, or they might leave out something notable just in the stress of the moment. So then the doctor has obviously an incomplete picture, which is already just over the phone by a layperson to begin with. So seems like that's tough, but it's just hard to imagine in a case that she described. Would there be a quote somebody would say, well, that could be upwards of $8,000 to $10,000 to treat that animal based on that description?
Definitely there are surgeries that could cost that much money depending on what they are. If you have an animal that has a bleeding mass internally, or a very sick patient with a foreign body that now is going to need several days in hospital, it certainly can get up there in price.
Yeah.
Again, though, it's easier to help answer those questions if you come in, you see what's happening. So there's no mystery about the tests that are being done, the skill that's being used. And at the end of the day, veterinary medicine is a tough field, but we all go into it because it's a passion and we care. And unfortunately, if I wish that care allowed us to continue providing services. So with it, we have to cover the expenses to be open 24/7 and people to work those shifts and be available to take those phone calls. So it's tough, but there are ways we can prepare for emergencies. And there are other places that can help with fosters as well. We don't have the funds that the Humane Society would, or shelters or rescues would, that get those tax benefits or tax breaks.
Yeah.
And so in her case, it was a foster pet. Like we definitely would help in triage and get it to somewhere where it needs to be. But, there are expensive surgeries.
Yeah. But I would think kind of with any animal, in a way, philosophically, it might be better to err based on what the description is by that person calling in and speaking with that vet at that moment, to sort of err on the side of it being little higher estimate, just so when people come in and said, oh my God, this is going to be $8,000 to get this kitten back up and running. It's still jarring, but it wouldn't be a shock at that moment because you'd already just said it was going to be between 8 and 10 based on the description you got over the phone. So it seems like that's better. It's tricky and difficult.
It's definitely tricky.
I'm thinking these are probably pretty singular cases where it would be anywhere near that kind of money, no matter what the description was over the phone.
Right. So, it's part of the discussion that has to be had in veterinary medicine. Finances are part of the discussion, and it's important that we are open and honest and transparent about the care that's needed. And we understand not everyone can do that, which is why we have options to help. There's third-party financing. There's insurances that people can look into. And then there are times where we have a fund called Veg Cares that can help for certain pets that have a good prognosis and meet certain qualifications. But again, we won't know that till they come in. So the truth is that we really want to see your pet come through the door, let us triage your pet, and then go through all options. And we'll find a way to say yes, whether it's working with someone in the community to another place that fits the needs, if we're able to help. But again, you know, just talking about money over the phone is not good for anything. That's not going to get the pet the help it needs. It's not going to feel right. And so I really would like to steer the conversation back to ways we can prevent some of these holiday pet emergencies and save everyone some money.
Right. Yeah. Because again, I think the idea that you can speak to a vet is great. It sounds like a real virtue. It sounds like she noted that when she was in Gainesville, tied into the vet school there. But there's really obviously, of course, no substitute for having that animal examined in person by the vet and then determining what needs to happen next.
Absolutely.
So this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Dr. Holly Dutton, Medical Director at the Tampa and Clearwater locations of VetGR for Pets, a national enterprise specializing in providing around-the-clock emergency and critical care services for pets. We're here today chiefly to discuss holiday-related emergency vet visits and what we can do to prevent those. So if you'd like to ask Dr. Dutton a question about emergency vet care, maybe a simple question, tied to the holidays or just maybe more generally within reason, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So let's dive into holiday-related emergency vet visits, as promised. So what is the most common issue that brings an animal to a vet hospital during the holidays?
Oh, yes. During the holidays, we get several food emergencies, actually. That's probably one of the top emergencies we see. So anything like pets getting into fatty foods, table scraps, in particular chocolate, lots of chocolate in the stockings, lots of chocolate, gingerbread, all of that. Anything that's left out on the counters during the holidays, pets can get into. So that's something that some of those have far greater ability to cause toxicities than others. So if you have any questions, again, you can give us a call and see. Should your pet be brought in, or is it something that you can wait and see?
Well, can I elaborate a little bit on the chocolate thing? Because I think a lot of people know chocolate plus dogs equals bad.
Right.
But what we don't know is something more specific and refined than that. So, and again, you know, candy and desserts are, of course, a big part of the holidays around. They're available for quick-moving dogs.
Whatever. Absolutely.
So I guess what may not be clear, even if we all kind of have an understanding that chocolate with dogs is not a good combo, how much chocolate is dangerous and what to do if your dog does eat some chocolate?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. So the question of how much chocolate is too much chocolate all depends on the type of chocolate. There's several different types of chocolates.
Right, dark chocolate's really bad, right?
Right, dark chocolate's going to be worse than white chocolate.
Right.
But it also depends on the size of your pet. So we have chocolate toxicity calculators where you can call in and we can say, yep, you need to come in right away, or nope, your pet should be fine. And
so you describe the chocolate and the weight of the dog, basically. Are those the two main factors, or is another factor as well?
Those are the two main factors, the type of chocolate and the size of the pet. So it's important to call in with the wrapper of the candy or whatever chocolate they did get into so that we can know for sure, because sometimes there's different percents of cocoa in different chocolates.
Yeah.
So, but those are the two main factors that you need to know. What type of chocolate, how much of it, I guess that's three, how much of it, what type, and the size of your pet.
And I guess a question that's not part of that calculus, but I would think would be important is how quickly after the dog has eaten the chocolate, because you might not know at first, right? You might stumble across a wrapper or whatever in the other room and say, oh my God, look what happened here. But that's, half an hour, 40 minutes after people were last in that room, let's say.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we would ask you over the phone how long it had been since the ingestion. And depending on when that is, we may have you come right in and induce vomiting if it is something that's going to be toxic, so we can limit the side effects, because chocolate is a stimulant. So it can have effects on the heart, the nervous system. And so we want to minimize those effects if the chocolate is at a dangerously high dose. On the other side, if we confirm that it is toxic, but it has been several hours post-ingestion, or we don't have any clue what that's going to look, we would have you come in and start checking some baseline parameters, monitoring, and we would also call the ASPCA poison control, depending on what was in the chocolate, to get a better treatment plan.
So it's all really so important to know what specifically they ate, when they ate it, and how much they ate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The other part is nowadays, not just with chocolate, we have xylitol in a lot of the holiday treats that we see.
I was going to ask you about xylitol.
Yeah, it's an artificial sweetener.
Yeah,
and it can cause dangerously low drops in your blood sugar and affect your liver. So that is it's important if we know that was in anything your pet ingested, because that is an emergency that needs to be seen immediately and extensive care is needed to ensure
What does xylitol do? Sound like it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it's an artificial sugar.
Yeah, but I mean, what does it do to the animal? Because it sounds like there's no time to waste and it's super serious.
Right. Yeah. So it can interfere with your body's ability to have the glucose it needs in the body for energy. And it can also damage the liver. And the liver is responsible for making your glucose, which we need on a daily basis.
Wow. Okay. So, and I guess it would be obvious to all of us, if we had stuff around the house that had xylitol in it, that you'd be pretty clear on that, because it would be like a sugar-free dessert of some kind. So your assumption would be at that point, it does have xylitol in case there's an issue.
Yeah, it's better to err on the side of caution, but we also don't want to induce vomiting or provide treatment that may be unnecessary. So it's, if you could look up the wrapper, find the wrapper and be certain, or even if you're scared or worried, you can come in and we'll read the wrapper with you and just give you peace of mind at that point.
And in the ingredients, that would be like clearly stated, probably one of the first ingredients. If it had xylitol in it, it would indicate that probably, right?
Yeah, it would definitely be on the ingredients list.
Like occasionally we run into, there's another name for someone's like, oh my God, I didn't realize that was xylitol.
Right. There could be other names that I'm unaware of, but like most of the ones that I've seen, it's xylitol is very explicitly on there on the ingredients. It's in tiny, tiny writing. So it can be easily missed.
Yeah.
But it's anything that says sugar-free peanut butter. There's sugar-free peanut butter it's in. A lot of gums it's in. Yeah. Sugar-free cookies. Sometimes people make brownies over the holidays and can use xylitol or sugar-free substances. Not all sugar-free substances are as dangerous, though, as xylitol.
Okay, well, I have another thing that this is related to, because like, as you noted, a lot of these things are related to something that the animal gets into and eats, and then there's a question or a problem. But let me, I thought we had another caller, sorry. Okay, yeah, so fatty foods from table scraps, I think you mentioned, and then that can cause pancreatitis, I guess?
Yeah.
And just so we all are on the same page, what is pancreatitis again?
So pancreatitis is inflammation of the pancreas, which is a small organ that is right outside the small intestine that helps with digestion. And so if you eat something that's high in fat, specifically dogs more than cats, pancreatitis, what happens is your pancreas essentially tries to start digesting itself. And so it's very painful. It leads to vomiting, diarrhea. It can be quite dangerous. They can get really dehydrated. And at some point they can even... it can lead to death in very severe situations. So
again, based on quantity and how long before it's discovered, what are the things that would lead to death in that situation?
Both. It just depends on the body's response. We don't exactly know why some dogs can eat anything in a trash can and they don't get sick, and then one pet has one piece
small
of a steak and now they're in a hospital. So much like people, we don't know why some people get pancreatitis and others. There's common factors that lead to it, but you can have two people experience the same situation and have different outcomes.
So again, table scraps, be careful about those. And just to back up a little bit, because when we can, we should try to suggest ways to prevent things. So
Absolutely. Back
to the chocolate situation, I guess obviously just be super careful where the chocolate is placed, you know, where there's access to it. And, you know, just make sure that it's not dog friendly and somebody to get to it. Yeah.
During the holidays, we're out of our routine. We are prepping for people to come over or going over to other people's houses. And with that, we a lot of times forget that our pets are also roaming around. Like they're part of the family. They may have their own stocking, but when you have people coming in and out of the house, dogs can get into the kitchen when normally they wouldn't. A baby gate could be left open. Someone could leave their chocolate out on the counter that you wouldn't normally do. So just being more aware, like awareness is the first step. Then from there, just being mindful and picking it up if you can. But inevitably, dogs are... they're Houdini sometimes. They get into it. And so we want to prevent as many as we can. But when it does occur, at least we're here for you to help you through it.
And speaking of getting into things, like stuff from the trash, I guess, is also prime territory. So like that could be bones or foil or different things from preparing the meal.
Yeah.
What happens there?
So again, bones in particular can cause, depending on what type they are, can also cause pancreatitis, but they can create other issues with your GI tract, foil, and sometimes there's even strings around your ham that may end up in the trash can. Those foils and strings can cause what are called foreign body obstructions, and so where things get stuck inside your intestines and you can't move things along, and so those become emergencies as well, and oftentimes
requires like some kind of procedure to remove it, probably, or
sometimes it may need surgery. And so first we would need to look at clinical signs. We would do diagnostics to see if they're a candidate for medical management or if surgery is indicated. And at that point, we would make a treatment plan and walk through what that looks like together. And you would be a part of the process the entire time.
Okay. So let me let folks know again. I might just be tuning in a bit late. This is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Holly Dutton, medical director at the Tampa and Clearwater locations of VegER for Pets, national enterprise specializing in providing emergency and critical care services for pets. Today, we're really focused on discussing holiday-related emergency pet vet visits and what can be done to prevent them. So if you'd like to ask Dr. Dutton a question on a related note, emergency vet care, especially during the holidays or otherwise within reason, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I guess another overlapping category, the one we just discussed, is foreign body ingestion. So this might be called the Christmas tree category, right? Because there's so many Christmas tree related things that animals do get into. So from ornaments to Christmas tree needles and tree water, et cetera. So what kind of risks do those things pose? And again, how do we, you got the Christmas tree in the living room or wherever it is. It's kind of hard unless you fence it off somehow to cordon it off with a security guard or something like that.
Right.
And you're like, how are you gonna, hold on one sec. Let's see if we can include a caller in this and then we'll come right back to that. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Dutton.
Yeah, you went through her contact information so fast, I couldn't figure out what you were saying, like VGR for pets, and I was wondering if you could go back through that, please.
Sure. It's Dr. Holly Dutton. She's medical director at the Tampa and Clearwater locations of VegER for Pets, and you can just search if you want to contact her, one of those hospitals, right? Is there some more direct line, Dr. Dunn?
There's phone numbers for each location that certainly would be accessible online.
Cool.
And there's a VegER for Pets website that will take you to any hospital nationwide.
It has a thing like locations where you can find a specific...
Exactly.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for your contribution. I've got six and might need you someday.
Oh, take care of your babies. Have a happy holiday.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for your call. Okay, so back to foreign body ingestion, Christmas tree related primarily, and what can happen. But I think where we left off when we took the call is what, if anything, we can really do to protect against people getting to, people meaning animals, getting to the Christmas tree, and like, you know, what's reasonable there to prevent that versus like, you know, it's being absurd, obviously, about fencing it off and having a security guard there. But,
right.
I mean, but you know, you almost need that because
sometimes.
There's sometimes some animals that I've been with are known so persistent and they're so enchanted by what they see that they're just going to get there no matter what it takes. And as soon as you leave the room or as soon as you set up something, they'll go around it. Or so what do we do?
Yeah, I have one of those pets that we have to block stuff off. But the few things to worry about with Christmas trees, and then we can talk about preventing them. Christmas trees bring ornaments. They bring tinsels. They bring extra cords. They bring, with live trees, water at the bottom of the tree. And all of those pose different risks. And so it's important to know that if your pet can leave it alone, great. But unfortunately, like toddlers, not all pets can leave it alone. And I have a golden retriever, and she absolutely would get into the chocolate, get into presents, all of those things. So you baby-proof, essentially. We have baby gates. I don't have babies anymore. My kids are older now. Not too old, but...
thank God you still have the gates.
Exactly. Yeah. My gates in my house are to keep my dog from getting into stuff. So, even a lot of times people get puppies at Christmas. Puppies want to chew on cords. They want to chew on everything. So crate training is especially important. And honestly, that is a great message to even start now. If you are getting a puppy... crate training so that you can keep them safe from holiday decor,
mishaps
when people come over.
Yeah.
They can't get on the counter if they're crate trained. And so the prevention is key, but it's ultimately sometimes you have to literally put baby gates around the tree or put the tree in areas. And then it doesn't just pertain to Christmas trees. There's also candles and other decorations.
Wreaths and stuff.
Wreaths. Yeah. And depending on what you celebrate for the holiday season, there could be different types of decorations and different types of foods that could be toxic. So it's just important to be mindful of it and get baby gates if all necessary, or even better, crate train.
All right. That sounds good. And on a related note, there's some plants that I guess are particularly toxic that are identified with a lot of holidays, including poinsettias, which, first of all, people argue about how to pronounce it. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
That's my best shot right now. But what's in that that's harmful? I guess I wouldn't have anticipated that.
So the exact nature of the toxin in it, I maybe knew at one point in my boards, but at the top of my head, I don't have that answer.
Okay.
But the truth is poinsettias are only really mild irritants for the GI tract.
Okay.
We have far more toxic plants that you could have in the house during the holidays, which would be lilies and mistletoes and holly. Those can be far more toxic.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the concern for a lot of people is getting, accidentally at least, under the mistletoe. But this is more like somebody getting into it and chomping on it.
Yeah.
And that's really, it's really high risk, kind of.
Yeah, and again, it depends on how much and when and the pet size. And so if you have these plants in your house, honestly, sometimes it's better yet to avoid them if you can when you have pets. I know that we love the decorations, but if it's not there, they can't eat it.
Yeah, so you just might have to forego temporarily some things, or put them in some sort of weird high location where they, even in their best leap, they couldn't get to it maybe, or something like that.
But, right, that may work for dogs, but cats can get up anywhere.
Although,
so
just
no lilies in the house with cats.
The cats
are
saying, just try me, I'll show you what I can do here.
Exactly.
And speaking of cats, I think it's important to mention lilies, which you just made a reference to, but those are particularly dangerous for cats, as I understand it. How so, and what happens, or what's the response if they do get into the lilies?
Yeah, so lilies, the biggest concern is that they can cause kidney failure in cats. And so, it can be quite devastating. And so even just some of the dust off the flower, the pollen, that in itself, a cat sniffing and put in licking it could be enough to put them in the hospital. And
how fast does that work? It sounds like it's super potent for a cat.
It is. It's one of those things that we're going to see the damage, if there's going to be damage, in the first 24, 48 hours. And so it's really important that they are seen right away, get baseline lab work to see where their values are at, so we can monitor while in hospital, and doing fluids to help flush things through and protect the kidneys. There's other things we can do to protect the kidneys, but ultimately, sadly, sometimes we wait and see, and we have to react. There's not many things we can be proactive about when it comes to lilies, other than don't get into it in the first
right.
place.
Right. Don't have them around cats.
Exactly.
In particular.
Yes.
It's not worth the risk, it sounds like. It sounds like it doesn't take much to set off a bad reaction. How bad it remains unclear, but...
I mean, it can
if you're saying just the pollen from that can have an effect, that's, scary.
It is scary, and it's unfortunately... sometimes people don't know they have a lily if they got flowers for as a gift or as a present or for a birthday, those things. And so it's important to look them up if you have a cat to make sure you don't have them.
Right. Make sure, if you can't clearly identify that it's a lily, you should double check or get a photo of it, or have somebody that does know.
Exactly.
Those flowers, well, or whatever. Okay. So sort of nearing the end of our time, Dr. Dunn, but let's skip around a little bit to some other things. Fireworks or noise-induced trauma. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least where I live, there's a lot of fireworks, and it's 2 or 3 days before whatever the, New Year's Eve, of course, and July 4th, and then at least a handful of days after. And it's super traumatizing. But You're not going to stop the people who are going to set off those fireworks. I've found the hard way over the years. But so what do we do to help protect those animals against having any more trauma than absolutely necessary, given that the fireworks are going to happen?
Yeah, there's a few things that's important to note with that. If you know in advance that your pet has noise phobia, is what we call it, that you know, they also sometimes also have storm phobia. If they have if they're afraid of storms, that thunder, they could also be afraid of the fireworks, but some may just be afraid of the fireworks. It's important if, one, you already know that you prepare, so you can have them in a quiet room with sound machines. Sometimes they need sedatives to keep them calm. So we get a lot of phone calls for exams just for sedatives prior to the new year. The other thing is that it's important to keep your pets indoors because they get scared and they can run off. So in the event that happens, it's good that you prepare in advance and make sure their microchips are updated, because unfortunately we will see some pets that have run away from their owners. And then even from then, injuries happen, like hit by cars or getting lost. And so it can be really traumatic and devastating. So preparing with microchips, making sure that's updated, keep them in a calm, quiet room. And then if sedatives are needed, then please make sure you have a relationship with your veterinarian and a recent exam so you can get those sedatives.
Okay. Sounds like that's your best shot to try to minimize things. One thing on a related note, and then we're going to probably ask maybe two more questions, then we're sadly going to be out of time, I think. But I saw a reference in some notes here to panic-triggered seizures. Mm-hmm. And predisposed animals. Can you say what that means or how that works?
So I'll try to explain that quickly. So stress-induced seizures are seizures that are present from a situation that lowered their threshold. So, you know, an animal can have a threshold for a seizure. Some may never have it. Some may have a lower threshold than others. And so if they already have a low threshold for seizures and they're already primed for it, then intense stress and anxiety can actually send them over to have a seizure. And so sometimes you don't even know that's the case until an event happens. And that can be quite scary. And
so that might be lurking there. And then the 4th of July comes, or New Year's Eve comes in this case, whatever. And then suddenly it sets off that seizure just with no rhyme or reason particularly, except that they were predisposed to it, which you may or may not know at the time.
Right. That's correct. That's correct. Wow. And, you know, from there, depending on their age, a workup may or may not be needed. But you could give us a call and go over all of that, and we could determine what next steps are needed. Sometimes if you do see a seizure, the things to make sure that you pay attention to is the how long the seizure lasts, how frequent they're occurring, and the time in between seizures. And so one seizure that lasts 30 seconds and never happens again, likely going to be fine, especially if they're within a younger age. A seizure that lasts for more than 5 minutes, immediate attention is needed because it can cause a lot of damage in your body because your body temperature rises.
So once again, really have to monitor those animals if something starts to happen in the wake of, in this case, fireworks or loud noises or whatever. And to see if it looks like a seizure, then you got to really sort of pay attention, it sounds like, to how long that seizure lasts or lasted when it was done.
And that's one of the biggest things that will tell us if you need to come right in or not. And you may not even see that your pet had a seizure. That's the other thing. They could have had one in the past and you never knew it. If it was so short and you weren't home, it's possible it happened before and now they were, you know, the more seizures you have, the more likely you are to have seizures.
Oh, geez.
It's one of those things.
Bad hand to be dealt.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So, Dr. Devon, we're sort of nearing the end of time. Is there any last kind of overall words of wisdom or parting shot you'd like to offer for our sort of holiday emergency vet visits that we're discussing here?
Yeah, we talked about a lot of sad things today, and so I don't want to scare anyone away from the holidays. Like, we all should enjoy the holiday season and hope that we do not see you in our emergency room. But it's, you know, the best treatment for any emergency is to prevent it. So a few things just to remember is keeping pets away from foods, keeping them confined, you know, not having access to chocolates and other toxins that may be in your home. And at the end of the day, just managing stress. It can be stressful for you and your family too. There's great times, but there's stressful times. And so your pets can also get stressed. So just know that if you need anything, you can give us a call and we're happy to walk you through it.
Okay. Again, this is Dr. Holly Dunn from both the Tampa and Clearwater locations of VetGR for Pets. Very easy to find information, phone number, by just searching VetGR for Pets, right? That'll yield the phone number for one or both.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming in. in, and thanks for giving all this good information. And let's hope that everybody has safe, incident-free holidays. And we'll talk to you again sometime soon, I hope.
Sounds good. Thank you, Duncan.
Okay. In a moment, I'll speak with Ellen Jaffe Jones, the stellar athlete, running coach, personal trainer, realtor, and wear many other hats. Slated to give a talk this Sunday, November 23rd, entitled The Vegan Edge in Competition in Life. And that includes a big vegan buffet spread at Lotus Vegan Restaurant in St. Pete. So we'll hear more about that in just a moment here on Talking Animals. I'm WNF. Right now, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with Martha Kelly and part of a piece called Horses Hate That We Ride In. Today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
Obviously, I love animals a lot. And I recently have become a vegetarian and also kind of an animal activist. I'm not in PETA, but I have watched Blackfish a bunch of times, and I bring it up at the drop of a hat. And if you haven't seen it, it's a documentary about this killer whale that was captured from the wild when he was a baby, and he's lived in captivity his whole life, and he's killed three people, and the last one was his trainer. And he's not the only killer whale in captivity that has attacked trainers. There's another one that killed a trainer, and then there's a bunch of them that have attacked and injured trainers. And SeaWorld has been around for over 50 years now. I just feel like it should be really obvious at this point that we need to stop encouraging these whales to pursue careers in show business because they are super unprofessional. And they should... Oh, well... Thanks, guys. I was kind of nervous about taking a drink of water. I was afraid I was going to accidentally throw it in my face, but a little high energy. Sorry. I also... One of my other radical ideas about animal rights is I don't think that we should ride horses anymore. I feel like they really hate it. They have to hate it. Because if they didn't, then how come we never see horses giving rides to other animals in the wild? It seems like something they would do. It would be super cute.
Okay, we had a little trouble locating Ellen, but I think we found her now. So, first of all, that was Martha Kelly in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Horses Hate That We Ride Them, taken from her Comedy Central special. And now it's time to speak with Ellen Jaffe Jones, accomplished athlete, personal trainer, and more. I'll be giving a talk this Sunday, November 23rd, entitled The Vegan Edge in Competition in Life at Lotus Vegan Restaurant in St. Pete, where they'll also serve a beautiful vegan buffet. So let's hear more right now by welcoming Ellen Jaffe Jones back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. And first of all, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
So, second of all, you've worn so many hats over the years and still do right now. Maybe you could take a moment and just give me an elevator pitch outlining the hats you're currently wearing.
Let's see. I'm a certified personal trainer at Crunch because, like, there aren't trainers anywhere near my age, and so there's a huge demand for that. And, of course, I've placed in 344 5K or longer races for my age group since 2006, just on plants, because somebody came up to me at a race once and said, you can't run on a vegan diet. So I set out to set the record straight, gotten two gold medals in the National Senior Games. I'm also the Community Relations Director at Fit to Run at UTC in Sarasota, just because I'm a crazy runner person.
Indeed.
I love talking about running. Because, you know, doing it on a plant-based diet, let's call it a vegan diet, you know, it's just the most amazing thing. We don't get arthritis. And I just turned 73 today, so.
Wow. Well, again, happy birthday yet again. So, fittingly, given all those things you just mentioned, the talk you'll be delivering Sunday afternoon at Lotus Vegan Restaurant in St. Pete is entitled The Vegan Edge in Competition and Life. Any kind of a sneak preview you might want to give us of the talk?
Well, it's really the best kept secret, I think, because as I've also written six vegan health and fitness books, the first one, Eat Vegan on $4 a Day, And, you know, there's no money in broccoli. And when you understand that, you have to be your own TV investigative reporter like I was to figure out the truth about diet and exercise. And, of course, it helps the planet and the animals, P.S. And, you know, if you love dogs and cats, why don't you love all the animals of the world? It just makes sense to, you know, align all your values and not just focus on one or two animals and say, oh, I love them. So for the environment, of course, it's just the best thing you can do. Lots of research on that. But you really have to find the credible research, not ones that are just kind of made up and ridiculous, because there are some news sources that really never were meant to be news in the beginning and just started out as entertainment. And so you just have to make sure you're getting your information from reliable sources, and which is harder to do in an AI age. But it's
that's right.
Possible.
But you got to check the sources, check the research, and make sure it holds up.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're doing this thing at the restaurant because restaurants are struggling these days with the cost of everything. You know, if I had to rewrite my book, it would probably be Eat Vegan on $6 or $7 a day because just seen so much inflation. And there's just, it still is hard to get financial backing to do everything that is needed to promote a healthful message. And doctors still don't get that information in medical school, which is why it's often not the first line of defense that you get if you start having issues as you age.
Right. Well, we're sort of nearing the end of our time. We got a bit of a late start. But let me just say that in addition to your talk, let me underscore the afternoon features of a vegan buffet with sounds like a gorgeous spread, 7 or 8 dishes. So we're not allowed to say the price of the tickets on the show, but how does one go about buying tickets?
Well, you can check. I think the easiest thing is go on the Florida Voices for Animals website. They have a link there, and you can just sign up. And
okay.
It's a smoking deal.
Cool. Okay, so that's what we'll do. And again, it's the Lotus Vegan Restaurant. So, Ellen, thanks for joining us, and good luck and continued success with all your multiple endeavors.
Thank you, Duncan. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up on WMNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WMNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Vaughn holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the traffic jam from 3 to 6 p.m. So next week on Talking Animals, I want to be sure to let you know that Glenn Hatchell will be my guest for another installment of Ask the Trainer, the 15th edition, wherein we invite listeners to call in and ask a question about their dog's or cat's behavior or training. Fielded by Glenn, the now-retired behavior intervention manager at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, a certified professional dog trainer and veteran accomplished dog trainer behavior. So be sure to join us for that. Of course, it was a WNF programmer. It's Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll see you next Wednesday here for Ask the Trainer.